I come to you with hat in hand. I beg you, our loyal and beloved listeners, to indulge us 1 week, where Oliver has found employment and is shooting a show on Fox, the likes of which none of us will ever see. And if we do, the likes of which none of us will ever enjoy. All of a sudden, Oliver has a job, and now he can't join us for the podcast. So from me,
Joe Buck, headed to Canton, Ohio, doing the Hall of Fame game tonight, going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Saturday, I have the ability to do the podcast, but Oliver, shooting a show and doing table reads, can't do it. So I, and we, because I speak for him in this case, beg for your forgiveness and ask you to listen to kind of a best of. Now, typically, if I see a best of, I'm just going to gloss right past it and forget it. But if you're new to the podcast, maybe you will learn things that have happened on this podcast in the past that you might have enjoyed, and you might go back and listen to past episodes. Maybe if you've listened to every episode, well, you'll just relive those moments and smile, thinking of a time when we were all younger, all way more innocent, and think about what those interactions meant to you then, and then compare them to how they make you feel now in 2021. So Margot Carmichael, Josh Windisch, our crack team, will entertain you with highlights and the best of over the next little chunk of time. And we look ahead to next week when Oliver will tell us about what it's like month 9 of coming off Lexapro, or I'll tell you about what it was like going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or I'll get you ready for the Field of Dreams game, which is coming up in Iowa in a cornfield. I'll tell you about my phone conversation today with Kevin Costner. Yes, I spoke to Kevin Costner today for a half hour about what it's going to be like when we're all there in Iowa for the Field of Dreams game when the Yankees play the White Sox in Dyersburg. I can do that joke because I'm from St. Louis. I'm from the Midwest, so it works. That's next week. But in the meantime, here you go. Sorry for my bad Kennedy, Winston Churchill, this guy's on his last breath impersonation of nothing at the beginning. And I hope that you stay with this podcast, because if you do, well, I do. Enjoy. Oh, hey, sorry, one more thing before you enjoy the quote-unquote best of. I host Jeopardy coming up on August 9th. That's Monday. So Monday through Friday, I'm going to need everyone that's listening to this, and at least 7 of everyone that's listening to this, all their friends, all 7, to tune into Jeopardy, because it's all about ratings. It's all about competition. It's all about answering questions in the form of a question. It's all about watching me host Jeopardy starting Monday. Don't forget, set your DVRs, and please watch. Okay? Huh? Can we make that pact, you and me? Doing a little Bateman here, you and me, bud, huh? You and me, bud, huh? Come on, you and me, we can do this. Come on now. Okay, Monday, please. Jeopardy, wherever you may be. Tune in. DVR it. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Lift your windows and shout it everywhere that can be heard. Okay, thank you. Now, enjoy. Best of. Yeah, no, that's not that's not annoying at all. It's like I'm doing a podcast with the Cookie Monster.
Oh, cookie, eggs. I like eggs. Eggs are good.
Oh, and there he is, right on cue.
I'm chewing, Adam. I'm chewing. I'm eating an egg sandwich, dude. You came on at the wrong time.
Oliver, can I ask? It looks like Joe is in like a super nice office with trophies and stuff behind him and pictures of his family. And that's just like you're surrounded by. Okay. Is that trash or what is
it? Yeah, it's trash. That's my egg sandwich. A banana.
Advil.
Yeah.
And then I got, it's just a piece of shit right now.
That's tight.
And then
that's
I have my shoes. You see all my, I have a weird shoe situation.
Well, we see what's important to you. That's nice.
And a yellow tail.
Not the family.
You don't understand. Adam, look, I have three kids. My house is a complete disaster and has been for about 12 years. It's just a kid's frat home. There's constant shit everywhere. You clean it up, and within 5 minutes, things just appear. I can't get it right, man.
Well, I moved into a house with my now fiance, and she has done all the decorating in my home. So as you could tell, that means there's absolutely nothing on any of the walls, and none of the things that I think are important in my life are worthy of my office. So,
when did you get engaged?
I got engaged October of 2019.
So next thing you know, there's a pandemic.
Sweet, sweet pandemic love. Yeah, we thought about ending it, but then we're like, well, we'll never find anyone else. So let's stick it out for 25 years, 30 years?
Yeah. Well, I got engaged. I was 29 years old. I was extremely fearful of it, right? Because I came from a family where my dad, you know, the bad divorce. Kurt came into my life, was my stepfather, and that's what I saw. That's what worked, you know? Mm-hmm. So I always had this notion of, I'm not going to get married. I'm just going to be in love.
Or were you should I just bang one out real quick marriage, and then the second one will be great, the second partnership. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I didn't want to follow in those footsteps because it was not pretty for a lot of people. But my mom is the one who basically said, you know, do you love her? You know, get engaged. It's just a token. Okay. You're giving her a ring, but it's a symbol. It's saying you want to be with her for the rest of your life. You don't have to get married right away. And that's exactly what we did. I proposed, and I'm like, we don't have to get married right away. So 2.5 years we were engaged, and it was nice.
That's great.
It was nice because there was no pressure.
We're going to be 2 years in. And I think that's the right time for us because, you know, we were able to wrap our heads around how much bullshit you have to do for a wedding. So that's basically, I think if we were in a year, if like we got engaged and then we got married within a year, we would get married in like an alleyway. But now we're going to do it somewhere nice with flowers and stuff. So it took us 2 years to get there.
I assume, and maybe I shouldn't, it's sexist probably, but is she hoping for the big wedding?
No, she actually, it's sort of the opposite of what you would think. She like wanted a really small, intimate, and I'm like, 5,000 people, a marching band. I don't get enough attention in my work life. I also need it at home. She wanted it much smaller, and I was like, well, we got to do something. And then so we sort of compromised with the pandemic, and it's going to be much smaller than I originally wanted, but we're still going to do it at the end of this year, and hopefully some of the restrictions and some of the protocols are more chillaxed. What I'm least looking forward to is being vulnerable, a word I can't say. You guys just outed me. Vulnerable. in front of all my friends and family. Because, you know, I'm used to doing comedy and I'm used to talking in front of people. But then being so open and honest with my feelings is going to be weird. I hope
people are going to expect a joke in there. People are going to expect.
Sure.
And your mind the entire time is going to be thinking of spots where you could digress and throw some line in.
I, without a doubt, won't be able to help myself. But part of me wants to be so real and so honest that it makes my dad and my uncles uncomfortable, because they're kind of, they have the same sort of emotional response as me, that they just start booing me. They're like, boo, yeah, boo, back to the funny shit. I respect a journal because, one, I don't ever, even though I definitely have time, because I watched all of Peaky Blinders twice during the pandemic to journal, but it's still, I'm always like, I don't have time for that. And then anything that I've ever, even when I remotely tried to journal back in the day, I look back at those and it's cool to just sort of like jump back into where your headspace was, you know, years ago.
Well, have you ever thought about journaling about Peaky Blinders?
That's a great idea.
And that's why you're the boss, Joe.
Damn it,
he did it again.
Yeah.
The problem is I've gone back and read journals, and it's the same shit from 12, 15 years ago as it is today. Nothing's changed, and that is depressing, because my New Year's resolutions are all the same. Everything's the same. It's like, you know, be a better guy, like be more emotional, write a script, direct something. It's all the same shit every single year that I never accomplished.
I think Adam got your journal because he's doing stuff.
I found that.
He's acting on your resolutions.
No, I actually have the exact same thing. It's funny you said that, because last time I was home visiting my family, which was over a year ago now, and my mom dug out like an old notebooks that I had and gave it to my fiance to look at, which was immediately embarrassing, but they were like old. They were like sixth grade old. And it was like, a note to your 20-year, for 20 years from now or whatever, that like some sort of school assignment that I had to do. And it was, get buff, make that Skrilla, I said, become a comedian and be a movie star. And then instead of writing star, I did a star, like I did a star design. And that's exactly who I am still.
And exactly what Hillary Duff wrote when she was 16 years old.
She did the same thing. She did
a star. Yeah, getting buff was something that was very important.
Yeah, super important. That's why she signed on to Million Dollar Baby. She's like, I've got to start training.
Yes.
I don't even need to read it. It's about working out. I've got to.
I'm in. Put me in.
Got to manifest this.
But by the way, you're doing pretty good with that. I mean, are you buff? Because everything else, it seems like you're taken care of.
Have you seen The Righteous Gemstones? Are you kidding? This kid's ripped.
Thank you, Joe. You know, I'm at a weird stage in my life where I work out every day. There's not a day that doesn't go by that I'm not out there pumping the irons. And I'm being serious about it.
Wow.
But I do work out every day. But I still, and I eat pretty well. I still drink just enough to negate all work that I do in the gym. So like, and I don't drink every day. It'll be like one day a week. And then my, you know, my like one friend comes over and I drink like 8 beers, and then it totally negates. When, you know, just 5 years ago, I could do that, and my body would be so on and popping. Damn, you should have seen me 5 years ago. You guys are like, we did. God. It's the Pitch Perfect movie, right?
Yeah.
You weren't that in good shape.
trust me, this is staying in, by the way. We have no structure to this.
If it stays podcast. In, then I'll never listen to this again. I don't listen to it now, but I'll tell people not to listen.
It's not staying in.
Yes, it is.
No, Josh gets upset because then people rip him.
People comment and say they complain.
Yeah, but Josh, you got to let go of your ego, Josh. This isn't about you, man.
Yes, it is. It's entirely about me.
Don't ask. Just take it out. Just take it out.
I like the in-between.
You live in the taint.
I
daddy issues. Living in the taint.
Living in the taint.
Hi, guys.
Hey, it's John Stamos. How are you?
Can we tell the audience? I mean, if you're not going to play what just happened, we got to tell them. I mean, Oliver had to take a pee, and he brought the mic in there with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I did.
We started to get into...
My dad. We started to get into the Hudson brothers. I've never seen an episode, not one.
So both your parents, Oliver, have each had variety shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Who can
My
say
mom
that?
Mom did a couple. She did a couple. One with Liza Minnelli and the Muppets.
And Laughing.
A few. And Laughing. I forgot about that.
My favorite thing your mom did. I think I showed you, Oliver. Did I ever when she was on the Dean Martin show with Dean, and they were doing a song about the Dum Dum Club. It was so beautiful.
Yep.
Loved it.
Well, you're a Disney file. I mean, were you into Kurt Russell?
Well, not the way you make it sound, but I liked him. Into Kurt Russell, like him.
Well, I'm just thinking because Disney file, right? Kurt, and then Elvis. Sure. Kurt played Elvis.
I know, so great. He was the best Elvis.
He was great.
He's a good guy, huh? So he was really your dad, right?
Yeah, he. I mean, he raised me. He was in my life at six or 7 years old, and he's the one who sort of made me into what I am, good and bad.
Yeah, and he just told us before he got on, John, that he's finally hit rock bottom.
I've been drinking it too much, and I've been chewing too much tobacco and smoking cigarettes, and I've been on a bit of a slide. So I finally hit bottom, and now I'm working my way back up. Acupuncture, eating right. I'm trying to get my shit together. You know,
you sober up a little bit. You sober up? I had to.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't. It wasn't a problem, but it was just an everyday thing. And
how is that not a problem? Every day I couldn't stop drinking. That wasn't a problem, but you know.
I guess it was a problem, but not in the sense of it was really fucking up my life. And I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic. You know what I mean? But I was feeling terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
And so I had to pull myself back up.
Good for you.
You're a healthy man, though.
Well, I had it 5 years ago. I hit the bottom too, and I was like, fuck. And I used to dream about having kids, and I'm like, I'm never going to have a kid like this. You'd lay in your bed and recover for a few days before having to go on camera. And I go like, what if I had a kid right now? Like, that wouldn't work. Mm. And now that I do, and he's turning three in a couple of weeks, you got to really be helped. Although I got to ask, I have I need a lot of advice from you guys, but two nights in a row, he didn't sleep. So I've slept zero, the last couple of nights. But.
How great is it, though? How great is it being a dad, though? I mean, I know it's he's three, and you've had 3 years to, but isn't it fucking, it's just incredible. I mean, I have three kids.
I know. I want to ask you guys so many questions, and I'm going to say first two. Man, you look great, Oliver, anyway. And Joe, I didn't really know you, but I listened to a bunch of podcasts last night with you guys, and you're really funny. You have great chemistry, and I like how you take the piss out of each other.
It's a weird mix, and I don't really know. I was friends with his sister before him. Now she won't take my calls, so I end up doing a podcast with Oliver, and we are definitely different people who enjoy each other's company so much. And, you know, it's funny for you, John, you know, you and I, we're now dads. I am for the second time, but in our 50s.
Yeah.
Our kids, so I have twin boys that were born 11 days after your son, Billy. And so I'm almost 52.
Right.
And I got to tell you, my patience level, maybe it's because I've done it before, but my patience level is about a 2
really?
On a scale of 0 to 100. I'm a good dad. I'm a good dad. But hey, it's a lot.
I think if I would have had kids when I was younger, my patience level would have been at a 2. Now I'm just like, okay, what, you know, burn the house down. I don't give a shit. I mean, all day long, the kid is trying to kill himself or kill me or my wife. Is that what you, I mean, he's on a suicide mission. Last week, this is a studio in here. He he'll find whatever the most dangerous thing is. We were, there was a guy over here helping me do a speaker thing, and we looked over and he had not one, but two screwdrivers going right into the socket.
Oh,
and
good.
I saw a tiny little, and I threw them back, and blah, but it's good. I never, you know, here's what I realized the most. I was thinking about this morning. Now I know why there's so many fucked up people in this world, because it's much harder than I thought. And my wife does 90% of it, right? I mean, you know, it takes so much patience, as you say.
Oh, that's so true. And I'm glad you said that, because it's so crazy frustrating sometimes. I had to put my first son down. He was crying so much.
Put him down like a horse? Like shoot him or something? What do you mean?
That's what I thought. Did you at least bring the curtain out?
No.
Brought the curtain out.
I had to put him on the bed and surround him with pillows because I just needed a break. I was like, all right, I got to put you down now because I need to walk away for a second.
God bless my wife, because she reads books, she listens to books on tape, and then she has this since the COVID, we had these sort of little preschool going on over here 3 days a week, which is really sweet, and they've taken over my the garage now, the garden, but and then she does this Raya class, Raya technique. Have you guys heard of that? Am I saying it right? It's very much like, how did that make you feel? And she made me sit in on it. And I, again, like it's another tool in the toolbox. And I think it's, I don't know if it's working yet, but some kid threw a bottle at Billy's head. It was plastic. And they're like, how did that make you feel? I said, how the fuck do you think it made him feel?
Somewhere, John, our dads are laughing.
Totally. I felt like I was in a sitcom. I'm sitting there with these hip parents and they're like, don't ask them if don't tell them you're proud of them. Ask them if they're proud of themselves.
God, see, I can't stand that stuff. Well, I can't stand it. I respect that. I think that we are emotionally evolved people, I think, from 50 years ago, just generally. And I think it's important that our kids are free to express emotions and talk about how they feel.
Yes.
But when it comes to certain things, it's not about how you feel. I mean, let's get real. When a kid hits you with a bottle, I don't give a I'm not going to talk it out. I'm gonna confront you, and I'm gonna act accordingly.
I don't want to put that thing down, because there's some good stuff that I've learned from
it, and
some of the stuff is working. And it's mainly a lot of it is just don't yell, and so we try not to yell, but then sometimes I yell.
How were you disciplined as a kid? Like, how were you raised, and do you want to emulate that? I mean, you obviously loved your dad. Can you take from what he did with you guys and sort of put that into your practice?
Yes. I just don't remember, how he was when we were this little. I don't remember getting, I mean, maybe a little bit of that, but discipline. My dad owned a fast food place, and I worked there, from 13 years old on. And in fact, I was working there on Sundays, and I got I was supposed to. He wanted me to go to college. I wasn't a student, man. I couldn't, deal with it anyway. And I went to to sign up at the local college, Cypress College, to that room where you sign in. But I couldn't find the room, so I came home. I said, He said, next semester you got to go to college, take business course, because he wanted me to, take over the restaurant. I said, okay. And then I was like, I got to get on TV. And I got on General Hospital, and I started working on. And at the time, '81, it was the. It was a gigantic show and everybody watched it. But my dad made me still come in on Sundays. I was a Sunday guy, and I still worked there for about 3 months after I was working during the week. The show was on air. I said, Dad, I'm famous. I got to go. But it was discipline, time, boundaries, all that stuff. My parents are both gone now. And I just, it's the saddest part for me is that I can't ask them some of these questions, because.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
My dad was so into sports, and I just didn't get it. I never liked it. I wanted to play with puppets and Matt, and the games, and he was athletic, and there was everybody would come. He's like, you go out of your way to hate sports. I just did. Somebody always had to lose, right? And I just didn't get it. And he was the golfer. He was like you guys. He was a great golfer. And I loved, yeah, as we talked, I love my dad. And I wanted to play with him. I wanted to spend time with him. So I took golf lessons by myself. And then I said, Dad, I'm ready. Let's go. And I wanted to be good. And we went out I grew up in Orange County. I can't remember it was in Cyprus, and Tiger Woods played around there too. I don't know what, can't remember. Anyway, and it was like, if you were over 90, you got in free that day. So there was like a lot of very nice women.
Sure. Yeah.
Two things happened. So one, so I get up and I'm like, my heart's pounding. I got to be good for my dad. You know? And I hit it and I slice the ball and it flies by this 90-year-old woman's temple and misses her by a quarter of an inch. I would have killed this woman. I mean, it would have been, you know, hey, there's John. Didn't he kill a golfing? And then, so my dad was, so my dad hit it and he was yelling to the ball. He's like, sit down, bitch, sit down, bitch. And three ladies sat down, you know, sat there. But then he got in the car and said, let's never do that again. And I don't think we did.
The last time you played golf.
That was
a beautiful story.
When I got the call for this new show, Big Shot, it's David. You get an offer on this David Kelly show. I said, oh my god,
yeah,
love
cool.
David Kelly. I always want to work.
Yeah,
with him.
He's the man.
You know, do I play? Is it a lawyer? Is it one of those great, you know, things he's doing on HBO now? And they said, mm-hmm. This is basketball. And I was like, oh no. Please tell me no. I'm not the player. Am I? And they said, well, we don't know yet. I'm like, oh, my heart just sunk.
Yeah.
And then I found out I was playing a coach and, you know, I dug it.
How did you deal with that, though? I mean, did you have to research and learn?
I did. I you know, because I don't watch sports ever. So I started studying Bobby Knight. My character throws a chair and he gets kicked out of the NCAA. And I have to sort of work my way back up at an all-girls private high school in Laguna. And I go in just coaching them as I coach the boys, you know. I watched a lot of tapes. And then a friend of mine said, hey, you know, I'm friends with Jerry West. He's a really cool guy. You want to talk to him? I was like, great. I know you guys probably know him. And he said, you want to come down to you want to come hang out? And I said, because the season hadn't started yet. I said, oh, you guys are having a rehearsal? And he said, we call it practice, John. But
what, have you been a Disney file all your life? And where did that come from?
I grew up near Disneyland in Orange County, and it was my childhood was there, and I used to, you know, I met girls there, I got turned on to music there, you know, that kind of stuff. I just loved the fan, and again, I wasn't escaping from a bad household or anything. I just, when you walk through those gates, the rest of the world was gone, and you know, it was a fantasy, and it was, you know, maybe it was too, I was too Pollyanna with all that, but I just liked it, and then when I started to get some dough, eBay was having, it was right when eBay started, and the first thing they had put up, Disney was decided to get rid of some stuff. And the first thing they had on eBay was the sign outside of, did you guys go to Disneyland when you were a kid in Anaheim?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That sign, that big blue sign that was on Harbor Boulevard, it's Disneyland, there, that was for sale. And the opening bid was 32,000, 36,000 or something. So I put that in, forgot about it. And everybody wanted it. Michael Jackson, it was supposed to go for millions of dollars. And the last hour, I go, I wonder what happened to that thing. And I see I'm winning, and I refresh. I say, oh, shit, all my business. I got to get this. Each letter is 14 by 8 or something. And, you know, it's in my backyard now.
But, oh, for real? God. You got it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's in your backyard. Like, what do you – it seems like a great idea until you get it.
Exactly. I just moved out of Beverly Hills, but I lived there, and I wanted to put the D up. So I put it like behind a guest house, and I didn't think any, cause I didn't want it to be, you know, seen or anything. And I didn't realize like from Laurel Canyon to Coldwater on Mulholland Highway, you could see a big D on the hill that says, you know, Dickhead lives there. but I don't have it up over here. But
oh my God.
The issue that I have sometimes is, and rumor you might even deal with this, there's this perception that, you know, we are, it's not a perception, it is true. We're very lucky to be born the way that we were born and born into the family that we were born into. But that doesn't diminish our struggles as human beings. You know, there's relativity when it comes to that. You know, I had major downs, you know, 100%. That I had to deal with and get through. And I'm sure you did as well.
I was going to say, like, something I learned about that is, like, just because your problems don't matter to some people, or I'm going to butcher this, but it's like, just because your problems don't matter doesn't mean they don't matter to you or like to the world. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, right. You can only ever judge someone based on their experience. Obviously, all three of us have experienced different things. That doesn't make what my reality or my experience of what I've experienced doesn't, like, my 10 is a 10 for me. Mm-hmm. Right. Your 10 of like, shit is hitting the fan, I'm on fire, is what it is for you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be different. You know, like, I never had to worry that there was food on my table or where how I was going to eat. But that doesn't mean that when a situation of that caliber for what my reality is happened to me, that my body didn't have the same reaction of fear, of unknowing, of unsafety. Mm. And I think sometimes that's really difficult for people, and even for myself sometimes, to kind of align with and listen to, you know, like I've had to deal with like addiction in my family and having to live through that and be scared and have, you know, a lot of stuff go down more. And like, I've had moments where I've been like, I have lived through more than like, I hope anybody has to, and have a lot of scars because of that. But that doesn't mean that my stuff is any worse or better than anybody else's. Mm-hmm. It's just what my stuff is.
That's right.
I think there's also a perception that, oh, you're just handed everything. You must not be very talented because you're just using nepotism or everything's been handed to you. So before you even do any work, before anybody's really seen what you can do, there's already this thing of, you know what, they're probably not that talented.
Yep. That expectation too.
Yeah.
Know, there's always the expectation when you walk into the room, oh, let's see how she does.
Yeah, you know. Let's see. Are you worth anything?
Yeah.
Can you do it? Can you blow us away? Because you already have, you know, it's not just some random guy or girl from the middle of nowhere. It's like, okay, well, either you're going to be amazing and blow us away, or you're going to be shit.
Mm-hmm. No in between. What's it gonna
be? Yeah, no in between. No room to grow.
How did you handle growing up in the spotlight? You know, what was that like for you? Did you hate it? Did you love it? I mean, I hated it. I when anyone would come up and talk to my mom or Kurt, there was something about it that drove me crazy. You know, I just was like, leave us the fuck alone. Just please leave us alone. I did not dig it.
I didn't really totally understand it until I got a little bit older. And I think there was just something so exciting for me. Like, I loved being on set because I wanted to be a grown-up from the time that I was, you know, like 5. I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to know all of the things. I already wanted to have all the things going. And so I think what bothered me the most is how bothered they were. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't understand whether it was good or bad. But I think seeing how, you know, upset it would make, you know, my dad or my mom, if we would be out at Disneyland and people would be kind of coming up to them, I wouldn't understand. Or if they would get frustrated and then go, oh, we got to leave because it's going to get too crazy. I didn't really understand. I was like, they just want to talk to you. They like you. You know, isn't that nice? Someone just wants to say hi. But, you know, I get it when you're working all the time and you just want to have a moment to be a dad or to just be a person. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, especially because of social media,
it's crazy.
It's a different world.
Totally different.
You know, you have to be on all the time and watch what you're doing and what you're saying and who you're saying it to and all of that.
I think, though, this with regard to that rumor, when you're used to having eyes on you and you were aware that eyes were on you when you were 5, 6, 7, when you're at Disneyland and you're with, you know, your parents, and I was in the small town of St. Louis, and Oliver certainly was. When you're used to that, at least you're a little bit better prepared for the world we live in now, which totally. Is knowing that anything you do has the potential of showing up and becoming viral and whatever the hell it's going to become, that you're a little bit better equipped to handle that than maybe somebody who's just finding fame that has never experienced any of that stuff before. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think the hardest, the most difficult thing, and I think even kind of to what Oliver was saying earlier, the thing that probably brought me to some of the lowest times was how judgmental people were about how I looked. Like right at the beginning of the whole kind of social media, TMZ, like blogosphere type shit. When you're in the public eye before I even chose to do it, you know, when I was like 14, 15, 16 years old, and people are like, yeah, she's fucking ugly. Like who this, you know, she's not worth anything. She doesn't have a job. What is she doing? And people just go in. And there's no time to have an awkward stage. There's no time to figure yourself out, to find value in yourself, to find where do I fit in this? Where do I fit when my parents are these two huge kind of personalities? And how do I fit into that in just being a person, let alone trying to do the same thing?
Were you open about it? You know, with your parents and just how that hurt you and what that all was. And was it out on the table? And how did your dad deal with something like that? As a father, I have a daughter as well. And I want to go kill everyone. You know what I mean? I have that anger I might probably have to deal with. But, totally. You know, how did your dad react to all that? Was he pretty even about it?
He was like, my dad's response was to go up to kids and say, hey, it's not okay to be mean. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to work. I appreciate it. You know, like, I don't know if people are going to really take that to heart. But, you know, one of the biggest things my mom always said to me was she tried to instill, like, you're unique and you don't take people's opinion. And I think what I have kind of evolved that into myself is, if you're getting validation from people from the good, then you have to take the bad. So if you just put yourself in a place where you're not listening to the good or bad, or using that as a bar by which to value yourself, then I would say it's a lot healthier. But it's hard not to. How can you not?
Yeah.
As a human being, you know?
Do you ever allow yourself to go, man, I just did really well? Do you ever allow yourself to pat yourself on the back?
Oof, I mean, sometimes, yeah. I think Dancing with the Stars was cool because it was so different and it was not something that my parents had ever done. It was so outside the realm of my norm. And I'd never danced before. I never, you know, like I had no training. I barely even worked out before that. So that was a pretty cool, but again, yeah, I mean, I'm a huge perfectionist. So I have that. It's never enough. Like, I feel like I could literally reach EGOT status and be like, oh man, I haven't climbed Mount Everest. I'm a piece of shit.
You know what I mean? But like, that's drive. But that's the drive you say you didn't have or you don't have because
she said she got it. She found it out of a van. You found the drive. You found that thing that you would die for.
Okay, I retract my last statement.
What is that? Because if you have any tips.
Well, but what's interesting is like I have those goals, right? And like I believe it's possible for me. I think that I'm talented enough to potentially like reach EGOT status one day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make that my goal to the universe and hope that maybe I get a fraction of it. Right. But that's what I'm putting out there to try and manifest. Mm-hmm. But I think where the drive comes in, and I don't know if you have this as well, Oliver, that's difficult, is the steps that take you there. Like I'm good with that huge goal and I'm like, yeah, that's going to happen. But finding the drive to do all of the little micro steps that will actually get you to the place where that's a possibility seems impossible sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally. I mean, that's where you sit back on your laurels and you're like, okay, get the fuck up. Do it. work hard, work harder than everybody else, you know? But then it gets into the realm of what makes you happy. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm happy where I am, then fuck everyone else for saying, oh, you're wasted potential. And, you know, sometimes my family and I don't get into it. We start talking. Da, da, da. And it's like, I'm good. You know, I've done television shows and I've made some money and I've got 3 kids and I've got an amazing family. It's like, I'm good. I'm happiest now. Maybe I won't be happy if all of a sudden I'm fucking grinding and grinding. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's not inherently who I am.
Listen, Oliver, you were one of my favorite parts of Dawson's Creek. So,
well, see, there you go.
Just saying.
You were in Dawson's Creek?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the last season.
No, I know. I know.
Come on, Joe. You know you love Dawson's Creek.
I loved it.
Hello.
Hello.
What's up, Bill? Where are you, Bill? Where in the world? Are you in L.A.?
L.A., where you got everything from progressive lunatics to neo-Nazis 10 miles away.
It's yeah, true. It's exciting. It's a potpourri.
People think L.A. is a bunch of, you know, Hollywood people being like, hey, man, when are walruses getting their own bathrooms? It's just like literally you have those people and 20 miles away. You can be down at a beach going to talking to neo-Nazis.
So, just a potpourri of shit.
It's so true.
Yeah, I mean,
man.
Well, that's at least, but most of the people are somewhere in the middle saying both of those people are nuts.
Right.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, no, you know, so, but it's the news.
Rational, so who's normal?
People do not make the news.
Who's rational anymore, though? You know, I mean, who is normal these days? What is normal?
Well, I'll tell you this. I had a buddy of mine move to Australia, and there's people down there that don't want to wear the mask either, and they also think it's a big phony thing. So this whole thing that, like, you know, what's wrong with America? It's there's a lot of people. I just talked to one guy who said people in Australia are doing it. So now I'm going to go the other way and say basically every country's doing what we're doing.
If Australia is doing it, then every country is doing it.
Everybody's doing it. That's how it works.
But you're right. I feel like I honestly believe that most people are in the middle, even politically, but they get no attention. They get no representation in candidates. It's just everybody on the extreme. They're not.
If you are rational on social media, you will not get that Instagram money.
No chance.
Yes.
No
chance. If you're like a model and you have, like, you got to have an irrational enhancements to your body before you can sell purses. If you look like me, you have to have an irrational political view. I got to be all the way over here or all the way over there. And then, you know, Bill, you've been called polarizing. And all of a sudden you start making all this money. Basically, the more of an idiot and less understanding person that you can be, that is the formula. I want to say, because most people watch you because it's entertaining, because it's just to see somebody like that. But to some people, they kind of take it at face value. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just sold for a few shekels, I sold a French's mustard beer about a week ago. Okay. You know, so I don't know where I stand on the
French's
rational, irrational.
Beer.
Yes.
Is that homemade?
No, this is French's has done a mustard beer and they were going to pay me to put it on my Instagram. And of course I said yes. So I don't know where I stand as far as my,
you need lip injections.
Yeah, you know, maybe I get better accounts.
Your sweet spot is you're the everyman that tells it like it is.
Right. Okay.
If you're a white dude who looks like you, then you have to be that guy who tells it like it is, which subtext means it's going to be kind of racist. I'm kind of racist and I love this beer. I like this guy. This guy speaks to me.
Right.
Totally.
What's it been like? Because you and I are basically the same age. I've got older daughters, but I'm back in the game with 2-year-old twin boys. And it's the best, but it is an ass kicking at this age when friends of mine, contemporaries of mine are so past all this. And I'm, you know, still changing diapers and doing all this stuff. What's that been like for you?
Well, I didn't have your first experience, so I had nothing to compare it to. So I was at the point of like, wow, is this never going to happen? I mean, I thought I was just going to stay in my hometown, marry a local girl and have a big family. That's what I thought. And, you know, like a lot of things in life, how you think your life's going to go, it goes in a completely different direction. So, I'm just, you know, I just focus on the advantage. The tremendous advantage of being an old dad is you have like another 25, for me, like 25 years of life experience. I'm a much calmer, relaxed, understanding person than I was when I was in my 20s. I think that I'm going to be a better dad. It sucks that I'm going to die way sooner. I mean, that just is the math. But
yeah, the math sucks. You can't do math.
Yeah, they'll have way. Well, here's the other thing. You know, I was thinking about it the other day as far as like, you know, wanting to live to 100. I figure if I get to 100, you know, my kids will be old enough where, you know, they'll be 50 years old or 40s, 50s. And it's like, then that'll be okay because they'll be married. They'll have their own lives and that type of thing. But I was thinking the sadness of living that long, you know, because I just lost a buddy the other day and, you know, we're all devastated. And but his funeral is going to be crazy. It's going to be amazing. All of us pouring our hearts out and doing all of this stuff. But if you live to be 100, all your friends are dead. And then you got all these young people that didn't know you in the prime of your life. So then it's up there, hey, you know, you just love sitting on that porch and you're just laying in the cat. Like, I did more than that. I was a wild man. You know, you got to give, there's got to be the sweet spot of where you die, where you lived a full life and you're also going to get like, you're going to get a good eulogy. You'll have enough friends left to send you off well.
We're going to be back next week with a new episode. It's my fault. It's not Joe's fault. It's my fault. I'm working. I have a new gig. You know what I mean? So don't blame Joe. We will be back.
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margo Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.